We used to think Glenn Danzig could do this. In honor of Logan, when Wolverine is inevitably recast, who should it be?
I am Matt Patches, and I am going to say, you know, I was daydreaming the other day about Dragon Ball Evolution. Don't ask. But I'm like, where is Justin Chatwin? Get him back in action movies. The new Wolverine. Everyone loves that guy.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven, and I'm going to say Armie Hammer, and he never takes off the mask because that's his Wolverine thing.
I'm David Ehrlich, and I'm going to say Viggo Mortensen's son, whatever his name is. He has long hair.
He has long hair.
Heavy metal. Looks nothing like Wolverine, but for some reason, as someone who adamantly believes that Hugh Jackman should be our last Wolverine, our only Wolverine, that's as good an answer as any.
But we actually are getting the best of all the answers, which is a lady Wolverine, right? Wait, you'll tell me later. Never mind.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fighting in the War Room. This is episode 156 for Tuesday, February 28th. And on this day in 1983, the final episode of MASH aired on CBS. And 125 million people watched that helicopter take off into
the
air.
The whole thing happened in an autistic kid's snow globe.
Why does that joke never get old? Or does it? Or are we in a snow globe? Last week we held a little contest, because we're giving away the Academy Award winning film Moonlight. We're giving away the Academy Award winning sound film Hacksaw Ridge. What did it win? That was a big deal, right?
Yeah, I think it's like Ridge. Sound editing.
Yeah, and he was nominated like 21 times. He finally won. We're giving away Hell or High Water, a copy of that film, and a copy of Manchester by the Sea, also an Academy Award-winning film now.
Are we only giving out copies of Hacksaw Ridge to our least favorite movies?
You know what? It has... I would recommend watching parts of it, or at least with it on the background. It's not a bad movie. But anyway, we're giving away copies of these movies in bundles, and all you had to do to enter was get someone to leave a review of the podcast, maybe a new listener, or I think actually Katie said if you left a review yourself, you could also enter the contest. Fine. Anyone who left a review is entered in the contest. We're going to extend it one more week. So if you didn't have time, if you skipped last week and you're only hearing this now, if you want to win one of these Blu-ray bundles of Academy Award-winning films, leave a review or get a friend to leave
Dave,
a review if you've
where
already done
it.
You
have to edit in Leonardo DiCaprio saying, "The show goes on."
From what movie?
Okay.
No.
The show goes on.
Is that The Aviator?
It's The Wolf of Wall Street. Come on. Wolf of Wall Street.
Catch Me If You Can. Oh, Gilbert Grape.
Man in the Iron Mask.
That's the man. You guys are all correct.
He says it. I love that he says the same line in every movie. It's such a nice little nod to his own career. Anyway. This is the section where we talk about the reviews. We're going to read some of the reviews that people left to win these bundles of Blu-rays. David!
Yeah, that's me. okay, so we're going to read a few of the reviews that have come in. We're going to go in chronological order, beginning on February 21st and marching into the present. First, we have Fun Podcast, but... ... from Starfina, who says, "I really love Fighting in the War Room. I often find it being one of the first podcasts I click on whenever it shows up. I listened to all the related podcasts as well and came to find it through Storm of Spoilers. The problem is I don't know that I can describe why I like it so much. My two least favorite of the bunch, Patches and David, talk the most and often cut off their other two hosts. I do value their opinions. They're just often a little full of themselves and dominate conversations a lot. I, of course, like everyone, want more Joanna, but I also just want more female voices in general. This is a common problem in the pop culture podcasts I like, and I'm always searching for more female writers to look out for. Bring on more female guests, and not just your partners occasionally. I think that's the best way to improve and combat the overwhelming maleness of the podcasts. I do love you guys, though, and keep up the great work."
Hard to argue. Hard to argue that. But we talk a lot on this podcast, David, because this is our only podcast.
I also, yeah, this is true. We don't have five podcasts like Dave and Katie. Also, I think this is the first and only time in my life I'll ever be referred to in any way, shape, or form as overwhelmingly male in a setting.
I know. Can like I go this? Laugh so, at my track coach in high school and take that?
So, part of me wants to take it, but Starfina's comment is well taken. It's a podcast, says Deacon_blues, but with a one where the L is, sort of like Dave with a seven. The first right. time I listened to Fighting in the War Room, my car was T-boned and totaled. Oh, no one was hurt.
Oh my God.
Despite this trauma and Dave's opinions, Dave with a seven, that is, I still listen, despite Dave's opinions. Every week is a great discussion about film and culture at large. David Ehrlich often has the most contrarian opinions, but they are all well... Oh, no, sorry, I added the all. They are well-reasoned. He just saves his energies for the movies he truly loves. Matt Patches is much more democratic in his enthusiasm and injects humor into the podcast. Katie Rich uses her editor skills to focus the conversation, asking questions and challenging opinions. Dave Seven and I don't align, but I do appreciate his outside knowledge about comics and even theme parks. P.S. More Joanna and even... And even Jordan Hoffman, as long as he shuts up about his critics' screening experiences.
Oh, wow.
P.P.S. I do not have the time or patience for Billions.
Wow. You know, this was a bad week for Katie to be in Los Angeles and not on the podcast. Everyone wants Katie, more Katie, too. And
well, she has her own Oscar podcast, so she could do that. Hi, Katie. We miss you. You look great on the Vanity Fair red carpet. Come home soon. Matt One Matt says, I listen to way too many film podcasts. Four, a pathetic four stars. I'm a huge fan of IndieWire and just recently found out that David was on a podcast. I've been listening for about 6 months now and enjoy the show.
Well, take a break, get a drink of water, go outside. Yeah. 6 months is a long time to just listen to podcasts.
We're going to read... I see what you did there. You bring the humor. You bring the humor.
I injected it, I would say. It's more of a... PhD in humor.
I am going to read one more for reasons that will soon become clear. I just glanced at it quickly with one eye.
F you.
By real PD, who says, the film podcast to end all film podcasts. Came for the Ehrlich and stayed for the Ehrlich, but I love the rest of you guys too. As soon as I realized that David Ehrlich, my favorite film critic, had a podcast, I dropped everything at once and listened to it. Ever since then, I've been hooked. As well as listening every week, I've been going back and listening to all the old podcasts. While David is my favorite, I love Katie, Patches, Dave Seven, Joanna almost just as much. And I also have a soft spot in my heart for Jordan Hoffman.
Jordan Hoffman is not on this podcast enough for all these reviews to be name-checking him.
May I recommend you see a cardiologist as soon as possible? That sounds very dangerous. I really appreciate how in-depth and meaningful your discussions are. There are so many surface-level film podcasts out there, and it's so amazing that you guys bring your discussions to a whole other level. Keep up the great work and keep talking politics. Hey. I love it. All right. We will.
That's a bunch of reviews. Thank you for leaving them. And leave more this week or get your friends to listen to the podcast and leave reviews so they can help you win a bundle of Blu-rays. This is very important for the future of film and film preservation that you own more physical media of great movies. So you can do that by leaving reviews. Now, on to the show!
Go to iTunes. Grab us by the bundles. Met a funny boy by the name of Tim. Took me to the funny audience, took me on a trip. Gotta get a new audience, kiss them on the lip, 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 lip. Dip, 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 dip. Got me by the hand, give me lots of flowers. Berries, give me cherries, give me lots of flowers. I'm a groom, I'm a bride, weddings in an hour. Weddings in an hour, weddings in an hour. Our baby, our baby. I will name her Lady, give her Daisy. She'll be crazy, she'll be like me. Maybe we can live like Brady's. Take me to a place where
who wants to start?
Well, the Oscars happened.
What an intro. You're as good as Justin Timberlake singing the Trolls song here.
So,
I know how to start.
Okay, go for it.
Here we go. One, Can't Stop the Feeling is a masterpiece. I have slowly come to realize this.
You're Everything out of your mind.
Masterpiece. How it was.
You are released. Worse than the auto-tune troll in the Trolls movie. The one who only speaks in auto-tune.
I have your the film right critic to troll. Talk in whatever terms I want about the goddamn Trolls movie because I had to sit through it and then write like 900 words about it. And the way that they ingrain that song in our subconscious months in advance so that by the time it came on in the movie, we were like, oh shit, love that song. Can't stop the feeling. I am fighting currently. I am in a deep and important fight. The soul of America hangs in the balance. To have that song played at my wedding, my fiance says no. We'll see.
See our previous wedding music related podcast for advice on
but
that.
I will. But just starting the show with that confirmed what I suspected about the broadcast itself, a suspicion that I had when I was reading Jimmy Kimmel's interview in Variety, where he says, and I not quote, but paraphrase, movies are just escapism, like they don't matter, pretty much is what he said. And that's Jimmy Kimmel's attitude about the movies. You got a taste of that when he had the same joke three times about how nobody saw these prize-winning films. And none of those jokes were at the expense of Matt Damon. And then he started the show with, not he, but the show started with Can't Stop the Feeling. And I think that the attitude, while there was political humor sprinkled throughout, and obviously Trump and his policies and his administration loomed large over the ceremony, but was spoken about like Voldemort, you know, very elliptically. Not even Asghar Farhadi mentioned him by name. That they were trying to make it into a party. And that was really my first... That it was a very... I can't remember the last time the Oscars felt like they were doing so much tone setting at the top of the show.
Or like just true counter-programming. It was the first thing I watched where the rest of the world could finally melt away. Like even the Super Bowl felt loaded with politics. And somehow the Oscars escaped that a bit.
Really?
He tweeted directly at Donald Trump, and I did not have the state of this country, the state of the world in my head. I was just enjoying myself.
That felt flat, but given the prominent role that race factored into, everything these days, but certainly the Oscars, I mean, the way that reductively La La Land was made, the white movie, and Moonlight, the black movie, and the only people who it seemed were not eager to pit them up against each other in those terms, the people who made them, I definitely think in the way that spirals out beyond that conversation becomes a political thing in much the same way as the Super Bowl did, I thought was very political in a sense. But I do hope that given that Moonlight's victory, I think in that regard, I mean, in addition to being my favorite film of last year, I think in that regard, it's such a positive step forward. I think it's such an agreeably positive step forward.
Although no love for heptapods at this year.
No love for heptapods. It's very sad. That, hopefully it's a good thing.
So Dave, go.
I don't know. I feel like you guys are really bearing the lead here, which is like the one
Hacksaw
thing that was.
Ridge won two awards. I know.
Or I mean that we could talk about how like Suicide Squad also won, which, and then like people on Twitter started like being like, well, I mean, it's just makeup and it did have good makeup. And I'm like, did you guys see fucking Star Trek Beyond? God damn it.
No, Suicide Squad had better makeup than Star Trek.
No.
Killer Croc. That was amazing.
There was like four different alien species that required full like shoulder prosthetics. One of them was Idris Elba to the point like, yeah, it was a unused plot point that they had to disguise his
face. Yeah, but the makeup people in Suicide Squad, number one, they had to put tattoos on a guy who could burst into flames at any time. And second, they had to touch Jai Courtney.
Oh, okay.
That's bravery.
I guess that second one you do deserve a tiny little gold bald man for. I'll give you that. It was political. It was like political news in the sense that I walked away to get something to eat thinking that I'd seen the end of it. And within like 5 minutes, my phone was like having news alerts about how the wrong person had like the wrong person almost got best picture. when La La Land had to get switched out. I don't know if you guys heard about this today. There weren't as many takes on it as I was expecting. But Envelope Gate happened, and we almost had a Best Picture screw up. But I don't...
Well, you know what's exciting about that? I don't understand. I read the headlines of, because I didn't really have an interest in reading the take on that experience and what that meant in a larger sense. I don't know if it has a cultural meaning or not. Maybe you guys could fill me in. But I enjoyed that it was a frenzy. It was chaos. It was something to talk about that was just about the show, if that makes sense. Like, it's just Academy politics. It's just something whack that happened in the setting of the Oscars. It's not saying something crazy that's igniting political conversation or cultural conversation, really. It's just about the show. It's just a three-rig circus. And that was kind of fun, although I'm sure there were certain souls crushed on that stage when we were watching it. But, you know, yeah. That happens. Yeah, no, I mean, there's collateral damage, no doubt. But I enjoyed it because I had nothing invested in that.
I am unable to see any sort of upside about the way that it went down. I think that Moonlight winning is phenomenal. Even though I am an unabashed fan of La La Land as well, I have somehow managed to warp space and time and enjoy both of these films. I don't know how I've done it, but perhaps I can teach you the ways. But Moonlight is an incredible winner, and I don't think in the long run that its win will be in any way diminished by the ceremony itself. But it is a shame that friend of the pod, as they would say on Pod Save America, Jordan Horowitz is he a friend of the pod? We'll have to get him on the pod to make him an official friend of the pod.
He is a friend of the pod. Well, he follows me on Twitter.
On the pod, but I think that we need to get him on the pod. But he also, I think this marks the first time that I've said pod as a shortening it on the podcast.
Truly Trump's America.
Reverse that, but Pod Save America has normalized it. Hashtag normalized. I think that that's just a brutal thing to see to someone you know or someone you don't know, someone you like, even someone you don't like. I mean, I think that
Jordan Horowitz,
as the world saw, is a mensch and handled it. And
that's why it's entertaining. It wouldn't be entertaining, yes, entertaining. If people were like breaking into tears. It's entertaining because he is a stand-up guy and he loves both these films too. I mean, he loves both.
I mean, and it resulted in I take back the fact the idea that there was nothing positive in it, because it did result in a beautiful human moment that showed real solidarity and mutual respect and appreciation between artists, and that and especially between artists behind these two films that have been really antagonized by people who had nothing to do with their making. And that was great to see. It was still heartbreaking and did also take a little bit of the wind out of the sails, in the moment at least, from Moonlight's victory, as much as Moonlight's victory will mean in the
I don't know, the shock, I mean, what we gain from the photos that have come out of the Oscar ceremony is something to that I'll be reveling in for weeks to come, like seeing Trevante Rhodes like gasping as he gets to finally take the stage. That's awesome.
You think Trevante Rhodes wouldn't have gasped if Moonlight, one of the biggest upsets in Oscar history, anyway?
I don't think it would have felt like one of the biggest upsets in Oscar history if it had happened.
I think in a $1.5 million movie about a gay black teen growing up.
Look, I understand that you're upset that you lost your bet about the Oscar Best Picture.
I did not have a ballot, I think that makes it a remarkable underdog, regardless in our current climate, and also weighed against Oscar history. And I think in the fact that La La Land seemed to be the favorite for months and months and months. Yes, I am sad that I have broken my 1-year streak of being able to call the Oscar Best Picture winner in September. But
this is going to make this year so much better. I'm really happy that happened.
Yeah, there's a big weight off your shoulders.
Yeah, I just don't have to hear about it. It's so good. Here's a question. Go.
No, I'm done.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we were talking about how we can enjoy the Oscars, and there was a really positive tone, starting with Justin Timberlake. That guy can get everyone clapping, including Jeff Bridges, who has a funny slow clap, and Nicole Kidman, who seems physically incapable of clapping. It was a really fun show. I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a good job. His shtick landed. Making fun of Matt Damon. Forever funny. I really enjoy it.
If you don't know what Matt's talking about when he says that Nicole Kidman doesn't know how to clap, please
look up that GIF
right now. some research. I assure you, it will be worth your time.
I really thought the photos of her were elongated or something. She has the longest hands, and they flip out. It was crazy. It's
But don't settle for photos, dear listeners. Find the GIF. The gift is life. No, it's amazing.
But so it was a really fun ceremony. But, you know, we spent a segment of this podcast talking about kind of like bracing for the politics and waiting to see this ceremony kind of weaponized in a way. Wasn't it political enough? Is it not confronting the notion? Like, some people tried to, you know, art is powerful. Art is what we have in these dark times. It's so essential. I don't know. That doesn't seem very rousing to me, but maybe you can't get that rousing.
Well, I think you're dealing mostly, if you're talking about people who are watching the telecast, you're dealing with like echo chamber number one for the most part. Like, you could sort of see that in the social media surrounding it, that there's like a certain part of, deplorable Twitter. What do we call them? The people that are really loud and maybe robots about not watching things and not buying things.
Film
but there's no evidence.
Russian racists. I don't know. Take your pick. Start with an
but it, either way, I think that this was more of what we'll be getting unless we get like the SAG Awards, an award show or a big media event that happens right after like legislation that gets a lot of people like riled up. Like, I don't know. It feels weird talking about it, knowing that by the time people are listening to this, the president will have addressed like the joint session of Congress and we'll know what the next thing we're going to be angry about is.
Yeah.
But I feel like we dodged a bullet through timing because, you know, we had a comparatively politically slow Friday because the president just wants to yell at the media rather than talk about what's actually happening.
I'll go back even further on what I said earlier about the fuck up not being any good about it. I think in this day and age, it's not necessarily a great thing, but as a silver lining, it's hard for me to be too upset whenever the world is given an opportunity to focus on films, especially great films and the people behind them. But, and rather than just like mocking Suicide Squad, which is also fun in its own right, but not as productive. I think in this day and age to see the world, the whole world, or what feels like it, even though the ratings were, and the only people who care about this are Trump's staff who are not doing their fucking jobs and are too busy like tweeting about how the ratings were slightly down, not factoring out that so many people are watching on the internet now anyway, is that you had the world bearing down and looking at Moonlight, all these eyes pointing at Moonlight, pointing at even La La Land and Manchester by the Sea, and so on. It's pretty incredible, and I think it's just nice to have movies reverberating around the culture like that.
Yeah, I think it was a fitting broadcast in response to Oscars So White that also happened to hit us at a time where we sort of needed to have that discussion anyway, and it was had civilly, and lots of things were awarded that I agreed with and disagreed with. And I got to see the Moana girl perform in real life and realize that she's basically like a living Disney princess. A whole bunch of fun discoveries.
How did they fuck up not getting The Rock to perform? I mean, maybe not the biggest Oscar fuck
because
up of the
he
night,
can't
but it's
sing.
Up there.
That's why.
America deserved to see him try.
I've seen a number of videos of The Rock singing his Moana song, and they're all the same. Like 5 seconds of the song. You're welcome. That's it. Go on the YouTube. Look at the behind the scenes. He can only sing that bar. He can't sing songs. It's all autotune. Not that Lin-Manuel Miranda can sing either.
Wow.
Just throwing it out there. He can rap. He can't sing. He knows he can't sing. But I like that he got a little prologue. Where there? There was a Hamilton reference. There was a Hamilton reference I didn't understand. Seth Rogen. That was confusing for me. Maybe I should listen.
You're still Hamilton ignorant?
I can't do it. I haven't found an appropriate time. This would have been good. This would have been a good moment. So wait, let me play Katie as we wrap up here. Were there any surprises? Dave, you said there was things that you didn't agree with. Were there any surprises besides Best Picture? Because actually, leading up to that, I was in a room full of people who were kind of like, this is kind of boring ceremony. They didn't really feel like anything crazy was happening or there were surprises in any of the categories, even though I think my ballot that I filled out at my little party was terrible. Like, I just went La La Land down the ballot, and it's all Fantastic Beasts won an Oscar this year. Good for them.
Yeah, I guess.
There were good coats. Good coats! So what's?
I guess I'm
you,
not
Dave?
One. I'm not as good at judging costumes, but I mean, I had mixed feelings about the Zootopia win because we had a conversation on this podcast, I believe, when it came out. Like, think that they could have like pushed a little farther in design, and it became about like what are you looking for in an animated picture win. But then I got to listen to Try Everything like a couple more times, and you know, it's fine. Let me ask you this, guys. If the song appears in Zootopia and the song is also talking about birds don't just fly, they fall down and get up, is that like a racial thing? Because all the birds would be sentient. Would it be me like saying people from the South don't just fly, they fall down, they get up?
And why, how is the car, like who drives the cars in Cars? We're on the subject.
It's a classic quandary. I don't know. It's getting more complicated with Cars 3. They get, like, bent out of shape, and there are new ones born, and, Zootopia is easier to stomach. Zootopia is a wonderful film, by the way. We've had this argument, but it is
Zootopia
a great, great movie.
Winning was absolutely not a surprise, but it was a travesty.
But here's the thing. It's actually the best animated film on that list.
Here's the thing. It is absolutely not.
It's better than Kubo. It has it's a little weightier than Kubo.
It's not better than Kubo. In fact, it's significantly worse than Kubo. And may God have mercy on your soul for suggesting
that. I'll say this. It's not as beautiful as Kubo, but I think Zootopia
like
has...
These, I am not sure how you've
Can we agree that the Red
Trump's
Turtles...
This is like a hyperbole battle that I don't necessarily agree with. Everybody's partially right.
We got to talk about the Red Turtle for one second. Because the guy fucked a turtle. He fucks
That's
a turtle.
All I want to say is Matt just wants to go on this podcast where families listen together over dinner and talk about how a guy fucks a turtle in the Red Turtle. Get over it.
Fine.
So every time you bring up the guy fucking a turtle, another guy gets T-boned in his car.
Subscribe to the Red Turtle cast. I'll tell you all about it.
Blood on your hands, Matt Patches.
All right. So that was the Oscars. Anything else
Yeah, when's the next award show? Let's do this.
What is the next award show? The Emmys? The Tonys
really,
just happened.
I really don't want to know.
They're coming for you. The award shows.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket.
So at the top of the show, we talked a little about giving away some Blu-rays, which you can win. I think you heard that part, or you skipped it. So we did that. But it reminded me, or it actually prompted me, to clear out my DVD collection. That is to say, part of my small New York apartment is filled with Blu-rays in multiple cabinets and bookshelves. David, I think you live a similar life. Isn't an entire wall of your living room like DVDs?
I have had to take trucks of DVDs home to my mother's garage.
Oh, God.
So now
it's time to clear out. What's wrong with you?
Now we are a Blu-ray only household. So I just have the Criterion. So Blu-rays and a number of assorted ones, but
this leads me directly to my point, which is so I wanted to get rid of as many. I bought binders. I'm just gonna put discs into these binders, throw away all. I recycled the cases. I went really all out for this purge and kept any nice boxes, all the Criterions I kept, and anything packaged that deserves a place on the wall. Very little. I wanted to get rid of as much as possible and put things in binders. Now, here's the thing. The binders don't accommodate multiple discs, or at least not the binders that I bought.
Binders are repulsive.
Binders are repulsive, but
the whole idea of physical media is to take some joy in the shape of it, in its texture, in its presence.
No, I'm thinking of the future. I'm thinking of the future.
All those things.
I just want to have them. I want to be able to show them to people in the future. I don't want them to adorn my walls. things are caving in. I'm freaking out. I needed to get everything out of my house. But here's the question to you guys. So because of these binders, a lot of these Blu-ray discs that we get or that people buy come with the Blu-ray disc, and they come with the DVD disc. And you can maybe get like a digital copy too or something. I threw all those away. I should have just announced the codes on this podcast and given people free movies. Well, sorry.
Yeah,
but my big question was, I trashed a lot of the DVD. Well, I put them on the curb so that people could take the DVD copies in the original boxes. I only have Blu-rays now. That's the only way I want to watch movies. I want the highest quality. I'm definitely going to always have a Blu-ray player as long as I possibly can, because that's the way I prefer to watch. But then I was thinking, well, way down the road, am I going to have to digitize this collection? Am I going to have to, like, go the extra purge step at some point to rip these DVDs and get files and then put everything in the cloud? Is that my next, like, neurotic
purge? This is where
purge?
Dave steps in and says, Dave never went to Blu-ray. Dave went directly to digital.
So that's my question. Did I make a mistake throwing DVDs away, standard def DVDs, or am I safe with Blu-rays?
I mean, I think you're going to be safe with Blu-rays as long as you're okay with maybe repurchasing some stuff that's going to be, I don't know, difficult to obtain. I'm trying to think about the stuff that I have to still rely on getting in physical disc form, and it's usually like foreign films that never came out like outside VHS or like some sort of weird dub of something that I have to get a specific version from a specific country. But I can't think about a situation where you're going to be like, oh man, I'm never going to be able to get like a DVD quality version of Speed like easily.
I like having a library.
Double copies of movies? Blu-ray and standard def?
Well, because they come in the little packages. I mean, really, the only ones I really care about really are the Criterions, which come just as Blu-rays.
But you can't even keep these discs in your house. You have to take them to your mother's house because you're running out of room.
I have made space for the Blu-rays. But, you know, I'll buy like the Moonlight Blu-ray and the La La Land Blu-ray.
You could win it if you leave a comment on iTunes.
I don't know if I'm eligible. I saw all of those game shows as a kid that always specified that the people who work at the companies are not eligible, and so I think we should respect that. But I've never been particularly future-proof. All I know is that there's that episode of Cowboy Bebop for all my anime fans out there, where they need to play like an old beta tape in 2071 or wherever the show takes place. And they have to find a beta tape player by flying to this planet and then like going into the bottom of this like sunken tower, and they go deeper and deeper and deeper, and they finally find it and are able to watch this one video. And I think about that all the time in terms of I'll be able to watch my Blu-rays of the future, but it'll be worth it to watch the special features in this age where we like don't like commentary tracks are dying because people don't buy them for the discs anymore. Like, I'm going to want to know what Richard Linklater had to say about Before Midnight on Blu-ray. So, like, I'm going to have to fucking go, and I'll do it, and it'll be great.
Well, to wrap up here, I also got rid of a box set of Mad Men Season 6 that I somehow acquired. Now, was this a mistake? Because it's streaming now on Netflix, but can you ever feel comfortable about the streaming
TV
world?
Doesn't count. TV no? does not count. TV is an inferior art form. Mad Men, of course, is the only exception. But TV, the way that we consume TV makes me feel like it doesn't count. And the only way that Mad Men, like, is a physical object, and I say this to someone who owns like 4 or 5 seasons of Mad Men on Blu-ray, would count is if it came in one definitive set that it was just all of it together. And maybe it does. I don't know. But I don't have that set if it does. And that's an object. And then
I don't disagree with that at all, actually.
Yeah.
That's a middle ground.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to do. I have a box set of the original Man from U.N.C.L.E. television show. It's 10 discs, and I'm not sure I'm ready to put them all in sleeves in a binder. But that's a segment for another time.
We'll be right back.
This Friday, Hugh Jackman hangs up the claws in Wolverine 3 Logan.
Logan.
Set in the future. Logan. I'm sorry. We were doing a bit. In Logan.
Great
this bit. Japanese
For
art
you.
Film.
For me, it's real.
I think David and I got to see it. Patches missed it. It's going to be, I think, an oft-discussed X-Men film far beyond its release. It follows Logan in 2029. He's taking care of Professor X, who is slowly going demented, which is dangerous because he's one of the most powerful mutants in the world.
His brain has been classified as a WMD.
It has indeed. Speaking of mutants in the world, apparently they are one of the few, most of the mutant population has been wiped out at this point. And so the whole otherism theme has definitely been amped up for this final installment from director James Mangold, who managed to wrangle a like depressing R-rated Western riff on this superhero franchise. Thanks in part to, I think, Deadpool's success, and also the success of the Wolverine is why, of course, he returned. This being the trilogy that I think has gone... I don't know if I could think of another trilogy that goes up in quality like this, starting with X-Men Origins Wolverine,
Twilight
which
went
makes,
up. Sorry.
In this much in quality?
The I guess last two Twilight know, movies are incredible.
Incredible, like, okay, all right, maybe Twilight... fell upwards. The Logan franchise definitely does. It's somehow managed to feel like the most in-canon X-Men movie just by mood alone. It's not like you have to have seen all the other eight movies that Hugh Jackman plays Wolverine in cameo or otherwise. But if you have, then this definitely brings... I think all versions of that character interacting with the X-Men universe to a close in a really nice way when he is given, or he has to protect this young girl who has his DNA in her as they flee a whole bunch of flee a whole bunch of Reavers or like mutant hunters, which are like guys with like robot arms. I don't know. David, I read your review on IndieWire, and it seems like we shared a lot of opinions about what this movie does well or does poorly. The middle's a little slow. The character work, I think, can be really good. But it seems like you are a little more not as into Logan as I was by the end of the day.
I mean, it's funny you put it that way because of the title of the film, because I was very into Logan the man, the character, less so the film overall, but I think that, and you can get this from my review currently on IndieWire.com, about that the real success of this movie is that it galvanizes what Hugh Jackman has managed to do over the last, 17 years of building this character, and
grow
it didn't
abs.
Really hit me. Yeah, it didn't really hit me until the last 10 minutes or so of this film, just how, complete and tortured and versatile and well realized and iconic ultimately he has managed to make this character, especially in contrast to the flimsy plastic bullshit iconography that we get in so many other superhero movies. I mean, I think that the big loser here is like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the proper one, not the Fox.
You don't think Robert Downey Jr. has put a stamp on Iron Man?
Robert Downey Jr. is not... I mean, of course he put a stamp on Iron Man, but he is not fit to kiss Logan's shiny metal adamantium claw.
Do you think that has to do with the physicality of Hugh Jackman? Yes. I mean, I made a joke about his abs, but it really, like...
Well, it has to
it's his body.
The quality of the movie itself. I mean, Logan, and this is James Mangold... He's an interesting guy, but he has really done a great job working on a much smaller budget, and really only because he's been working on a much smaller budget. I mean, Logan really only feels a little bit more expensive than Deadpool. It feels a lot cheaper than The Wolverine. It's a lot smaller than Wolverine. This is a movie that, like The Wolverine, is grounded in genre first and not the superhero genre. It is a Western. Really, the movie Shane is a... very explicit touch point here. It's a factor in the movie. And that wears his influences on its shoulders. I mean, this is a gritty Western. They are gritty is like a joke word now, but I think it's definitely earned by this film. It's a hard R, and not because of Deadpool. I mean, it makes far greater use of that. It feels raw and rugged, and like everyone is sort of at the end of the ropes, and not because they're done with the franchise, but just because the characters have been so whittled down by all the things that they've survived over the years. And you think constantly while watching this movie about, you even think back to the god-awful Wolverine Origins movie, just about all the centuries of fighting, the wars, the number of people he's killed. I mean, all of these things are there in his movements. They're there in his physicality. And the movie does absolutely nothing to engender an emotional relationship to a character like this. If you have not seen the previous ones, I feel like the power of it was television-esque, was serialized, and that it felt like the cumulative weight of watching this character evolve over the years.
Wait, is that a negative?
No, it's not a negative. It's a negative on this as like a self-contained experience, which is why that I recommended people watch even the bad Wolverine movies before and the bad X-Men movies before seeing this one, just because I think that the movie starts with you already in neutral going down the hill. And I think you'll just get a lot more out of it if you're already feeling that momentum. But this is not a very strong movie in and of itself. A lot of it is slack and dull. The middle section is real a rough ride. I do think that what they do with the little girl character is strong. But I think they get so much out of telling a more grounded human story this way, and it does an incredible justice to Hugh Jackman's work and the franchise as a whole, and also I think posits a way forward for superhero movies, because it's not I've used this quote on this podcast in a number of different contexts over the years, when I always quote that Ricky Jay line from Boogie Nights where he's like, "You made a real movie, Jack," but this is not Captain America Civil War. I mean, this is not a Batman v Superman. It is not a superhero movie first. This is just a drama with occasional, there are like two action scenes in the movie, like, and they're small, with like occasional bursts of action. Wolverine's
like four action scenes in the movie, but go ahead.
There are like two major set pieces in the movie, one 30 minutes in and one at the end. And then there's like sporadic scenes of him disemboweling people like he does over the opening credits.
Early on there's like a whole car chase that ends on like by crossing train tracks.
That's one of the big action sequences. Like that's the big one for the first like hours of the movie.
So you didn't like the whatever happens in the Oklahoma Las Vegas?
No, and I think
interesting.
I didn't, and I think I will not reveal particulars, but there is a choice that they made involving one particular antagonist. That I think is terrible. And I just sort of rolled my eyes every time he appeared on screen. And I think that, like him or not, you will know what I'm talking about when he shows up. I do think that this movie it just does a lot for the character of the franchise. It underlines a tremendous amount of respect for Hugh Jackman, and it says that you can make mutants and superheroes into humans. And you can tell human stories with them. You can do it at a smaller price point and reap much greater dividends. And I'm hoping once, if we are still making movies and still on this earth after Infinity War comes out and it's just like one giant purple glowing space orgy of blazers and shit, that we can look at this movie as the template to move forward.
I think it's going to be hard to kill off kill off. The character's gonna die. To kill off a character any more memorably than Logan does. Just because it does feel like it's bringing the end to an entire franchise, and then also coming at a time when the previous X-Men movie was X-Men Apocalypse, and it was just so...
Which was great.
Bryan Singer has like two metaphors for what being a mutant is, and it's Holocaust Jew and gay person, and he keeps making that movie over and over again, and it's movies like Logan that explore explore really what the property can be beyond what David described as a big purple something with lasers and shit.
Although they don't seem to be shaking things up. Isn't like Simon Kinberg, who wrote all the big X-Men movies, making the next X-Men movie?
Yeah, when, this is as good as it's going to get, people, so enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a way through, it's going to be more like Logan, and it's going to be less like whatever Deadpool 2 ends up being.
Oh, Deadpool.
This, Quips.
I think Logan is going to make, if you would at all self-identify as a fan of Wolverine as a character and have enjoyed any of the movies in which he's starred, I think you're going to be over the moon for this movie. Although it ends on such a strong note, it was so many and smart beats that it's easy to forget how slack it gets in the middle. But I think for the ending that it gives fans, I think they will be okay with that.
What do you think Hugh Jackman gets right about Wolverine? Like, I mean, we were kind of talking about the physicality makes him iconic, but what separates him from everyone else who seems to have played a superhero and been so anonymous?
I'm going to defer to Dave for most of this, but my two cents are just that he doesn't, and this is maybe too abstract to be helpful, but he doesn't treat Wolverine, the character, the qualities that make Wolverine who he is, as like a shell, as like a superhero armor, in the way that I think Robert Downey Jr. does. He's not easily reduced down to just one affect of like, I'm the sarcastic rich white guy, or like, I'm the socially like irony struggling space god, and I'm like the super virtuous unfrozen guy. Like, he is a lot more complete than that, and he has always insisted upon being that. I think playing a curmudgeon, sort of.
It reminds me of Ron Perlman's Hellboy, and not just because they chomp cigars, but some of what you're talking about. The dimension, there is dimension there. They have loved ones, and they have rivals, and they have people they just want to slice in half. And Dave, they always seem to serve him that.
Yeah, no, I think he got it pretty much right. I don't want to encapsulate everything in a moment, but in the first X-Men movie, when he tells Rogue that it hurts every time he pops his claws, like, that sort of thing always seemed evident with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, even when the movie he was in was bad enough that they needed him to be strangely active, despite that character trait. But he always managed to be like an outsider, and then we sort of like watched him fall in love with Jean Grey and like sort of have to like give her up. And it got to the point where the Hugh Jackman Wolverine is as much a Wolverine as the Wolverine in the comics, and they're not the same thing.
And this movie knows that. It's interesting how this movie literally plays upon the idea that Dave just mentioned, in a way that I found kind of cute and liked.
What do you mean that he has history? This character.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to say exactly what I mean, but if you saw the first 45, I mean, I don't know. It happens very early in the movie. I think I'll say two things that are stored, not spoilery, but they both happen towards the end of the first 45 minutes of the movie.
If you want no spoilers, hit the 30-second ahead button.
Yeah, 30 seconds. One is that the X-Men comic books are a plot device in this movie. The little girl reads them. She has them. Her conception of Wolverine is the comic book conception of Wolverine. And so she is like meeting the real man. And the movie does some interesting things in playing with that contrast. The other thing is a little bit of a misgiving, which is that, and maybe Dave will tell me why I'm stupid for thinking this, but the idea is that this little girl was like a clone and made in a lab. And clones are almost always the least interesting dramatic choice that you could make about a character. And I speaking of Jean Grey, I don't understand why. I mean, maybe this would have been too disruptive to the canon, but like, why she couldn't have been their child that like he didn't know that they had. I just thought, or whatever. I mean, like, any choice other than she was a clone who you didn't know existed, was raised in the lab, I think would have been more interesting. Even if it would have done more to force some sort of paternal interest on his part.
Well, wasn't she disintegrated?
I don't know. It's the X-Men movies. Who cares? They like, go back and talk whatever they want.
I mean, yeah, it's actually, what is it? Cyclops and Jean Grey's son time traveling is Cable. Yes. So I don't know if we're going to end up dealing with that in Deadpool 2 when he's going to show up.
Wait, which one's Cable?
Cable has the eye that's like exploding. His eye is flaming out. And
we haven't seen
hair.
Him on screen yet, so, but he will be in Deadpool 2.
He has a big fucking gun.
Yeah, he has a big fucking gun. So I don't see why I did the time travel thing. X-23 is, in the comic book thing, a genetic creation, and that's what makes her an outsider. So she's younger than Wolverine and doesn't have, like, the years that make him hard. What makes her hard is her upbringing. I kind of like the idea that they have been making, like, illegal Mexican X-Men, because who gives a shit about Mexicans in 2029? That rang true to me.
That part is certainly timely and very realistic in its own way.
Yeah, you have all the white biker guys chasing the little, you know, black and Mexican kids around Mexico, and one of them happens across Wolverine because she read some comic books. I think it works out. The Hugh Jackman Wolverine is different enough from Wolverine that's what makes me, like, absolutely sure that at some point it's going to be recast, because Wolverine as a piece of the X-Men I don't think was ever properly used. Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, or Hugh Jackman's Logan, however we're going to end up referring to it, had, like, a complete arc over some really bad movies. But I think eventually you're going to need that Wolverine piece whenever you have, like, another Cyclops piece and another Jean Grey piece running up against each other, which is happening with Simon Kinberg's Supernova. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Wolverine is a place on a sitcom. It's a character on a sitcom. You gotta fill that character with something. There's only so many X-Men characters that plug that hole, because Wolverine was so popular they made him that character on so many teams. It's going to be interesting to see how long Hugh Jackman could keep Logan underground.
Logan.
Longer than Superman. Logan.
That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We'll be back next week with another episode and more Katie to diversify our macho opinions.
Yeah, we should, as bitter as I am that Dave and Katie have other podcasts, this was our Oscar episode, and Katie does have a whole great podcast just about the Oscars. She was at the Oscars, so if you want to hear Katie talk about the Oscars, and I'm sure that you do, please download Little Gold Men.
And Joanna's on that too, so all the people writing in about Joanna get a bonus. Everything's great. But also listen to us. Anyway, why don't we tell people where they can find us on the internet? I guess I'll go first, because I usually do. I'm Matt Patches, and I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches. I am the senior entertainment editor of Thrillist.com. Did I say I'm on Twitter? Oh, yeah, I already did. And then FightingInTheWarRoom.com. We have a website. Yes, listen to our episodes, share them, or leave comments, feedback, questions. We can field them on the podcast. If you do, that's FightingInTheWarRoom.com.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior film critic at IndieWire. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich. You can find all of us on Mark Zuckerberg's Presents the Facebook Origins. The Facebook. Facebook. Fighting in the War Room.
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. Spell my first name, D-A-7-E. That's also where you can find me on Twitter. You can find the rest of my podcast, FightingInTheWarRoom.com. Don't know how I ended up producing them, but, like, that many podcasts and, like, helping people out with podcasts, but it is my want now. So I should tell our listener who is looking for more female voices that we also have a helping hand in a sister podcast, a shadow sister podcast, because we, like, don't talk about it too much, but Popcorn and Prosecco with Christy Puchko, Perry Nemiroff, and Angie Han is a pop culture movie review podcast that has only women on it, and I think maybe you should check that out if you've got more time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just wrap up myself?
There's no Katie.
I can do it. And I'm Katie Rich. You can find me on Live Valley Fair Hollywood. That does it for this week. And you can find the rest of us on Twitter at FITWR, where you can answer this week's Light Grab question, which was, in honor of Logan, when Wolverine is inevitably cast, who should it be? And that does it for this week. We'll see you next week.